Okay, so that's John chapter 6, and it's 25, verse 25 to verse 40. When they found him on the other side of the lake, they asked him, "Rabbi, when did you get here?" Jesus answered,
"Very truly I tell you, you are looking for me, not because you saw the signs I performed, but because you ate the loaves and had your fill. Do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. For on him God the Father has placed his seal of approval."
Then they asked him, "What must we do to do the works God requires?" Jesus answered,
"The work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent."
So they asked him, "What sign then will you give that we may see it and believe you? What will you do? Our ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness. As it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat." Jesus said to them,
"Very truly I tell you, it is not Moses who has given you the bread from heaven, but it is my Father who gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is the bread that comes down from heaven and gives life to the world."
"Sir," they said, "always give us this bread." Then Jesus declared,
"I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. But as I told you, you have seen me, and still you do not believe. All those the Father gives me will come to me, and whoever comes to me I will never drive away. For I have come down from heaven, not to do my will, but to do the will of him who sent me. And this is the will of him who sent me, that I shall lose none of all those he has given me, but raise them up on the last day. For my Father's will is that everyone who looks to the Son and believes in him shall have eternal life, and I will raise them up on the last day."
Thanks very much. I think Claire's taken her bread away. It looked very tasty, that bread. Now, we're thinking today about this Bible passage, and the title we've got is Working Hard to Get What We Need. And I wonder if your to-do list feels a little bit like that. Just so many things on it. Because lockdown does kind of make life a bit quieter for some people. They find themselves not able to do things that they'd usually be able to do. But for lots of us, it's made life so much busier. The boundaries are blurred between the different areas of life because they're all happening in one place. So many of the support structures that we'd rely on, friends, family, have been made illegal. Children's education is all happening at home, and it feels like there's so much to do around that. So much of the kind of social contact, the refreshing, energizing bits of life are so much harder these days. And as well as those kind of challenging aspects about lockdown, many people are struggling to make ends meet, facing really tough times, struggling with work or lack of work. And life can feel very busy. It can feel busy at home. It can feel busy in our different areas of responsibility. And we often try and deal with that, rightly, by working harder, by pushing ourselves further. Perhaps we do it to try and impress our boss so that we can win their approval, to win even better, a promotion, better pay. To earn enough to get on a good holiday when those are allowed, or to fund some home improvements. We find ourselves working harder and harder to get perhaps what we need, or perhaps what we really want. And sometimes we can apply this kind of mindset to our Christian life as well. I'm aware that there'll be people watching and listening who may not be clear exactly where they stand with Christian faith. Maybe you're still asking questions. Well, it's great that you're getting to listen to this bit of the Bible, because there's some really good news here. But it also shows us some wrong ways that we might have in trying to relate to God by working harder to impress him, to impress others at church as well. Perhaps to try and be sure of our place in heaven by doing more and more stuff. We've got just on the wall here the Ten Commandments, a big list of things that God expects us to do. Are we going to be good enough for God? That's one of the questions that comes out as the people were asking Jesus some questions in the story today. They asked Jesus this question: what must we do to do the works God requires? And it's really a perennial human question. It's one that we keep on asking as a human race? And it gets answered in quite similar ways across many different religions and philosophies. So there's the five pillars of Islam, or there's the Eightfold Path, or Seven Steps to Success. It's a kind of pay-as-you-go religion. You have to keep on topping it up so that you make sure that you're going to meet the standard that God requires. What must we do to do the works God requires? That's the question that the crowd put to Jesus that day. It's a question that we often find ourselves asking, but Jesus' answer is really striking. Did you spot that as we were reading it? It's in verse 29. Jesus answered, "The work of God is this." Do you see the difference there? They're asking, what are all these different works we've got to do? Give us a big long to-do list. And Jesus says, there's just one thing that we need. Just one. Just one thing. And it's there. To believe in the one that God has sent. To believe in Jesus. Just that one thing is what it takes to satisfy God. To make him welcome us. Believe in Jesus, to trust in him, to rely on him, to throw ourselves onto him as the only one who can bring us safe to heaven, as the children's action was showing us earlier. When we stand before God on that last day, he will ask us just one question. He will ask us, did you believe in Jesus? Did you trust in Jesus? Did you rely on Jesus? That's the only question he's going to ask. It's not going to be more complicated than that. It's beautifully simple, isn't it? This is why the Christian message is such good news. There's just one work that God requires, that we believe in the one that he has sent, in Jesus. And in some ways, it's kind of an unwork. It's an anti-work. It's a letting go of all our attempts to achieve anything for ourselves and saying, Lord, I can't do this. I need Jesus to get me there. I need your son. And we could never have made this up, could we? This is just such wonderfully good news that God, the eternal God, might send his son into the world. Because that's what he's done. He sent his son into the world to rescue us. Just one work, believe in Jesus. And how do the crowds respond to this amazing message of good news? Well, they start asking Jesus to prove it. Go on, prove that you're the one. No matter that he's just walked across the lake or across the top of the water or fed 5,000 people with five loaves and two fish. They want more proof. They want more signs. They want more evidence. Well, how much more do they want? How much more proof do we need of who Jesus is? It just goes to show that seeing is not believing. The crowd saw the miracles, but they refused to believe in Jesus. But this is one of the reasons why John, the gospel writer, wrote down his gospel. He wrote down these signs, these miracles. And he says in chapter 20, verse 31, these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. So we've got all the evidence that we need here in the Bible, in John's gospel, to believe in Jesus, to trust him, to know that he's the one that can bring us safe to eternal life. So there's just one work that God requires. He says, believe in the Son, in Jesus. Have you done that? Have you believed in the Son? Just one thing that's necessary. If you've done that, then that's wonderful. You can be confident that God has accepted you, that he will bring you safe to heaven. He has given you eternal life. Just one thing is necessary. It's not a great big long to-do list. Just one thing on it, believe. And if you have believed, well, there's two wonderful blessings that I want to pick up just briefly in the remainder of the time that we've got looking at this. One of these great blessings is eternal satisfaction. Eternal satisfaction. It's down in verse 35. You can see it on the screen. Then Jesus declared, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry. And whoever believes in me will never be thirsty." Jesus is the bread of life. With him, we will never go hungry or thirsty. It's that sense of eternal satisfaction that we can find when we come to Jesus, when we trust in him, when we believe in him. No more of that deep sense of longing, of hunger or thirst. We're able to be satisfied and contented. I wonder if you've ever eaten a big meal, perhaps on Christmas Day, you kind of sit back and there's just kind of that feeling of, that feels well, hopefully good, hopefully not overfull, but that feels satisfying. I feel like I couldn't eat for a long time now. Well, of course, when we do eat a big meal, we have to come back for another one in 6 or 12 hours' time. But with Jesus, there's never a sense that we need to come back and have another meal. He is all that we need. And he says, I am the bread of life. Now, bread was one of the staple foods that they had in first century Israel. I think if Jesus had gone to the Far East, he might have said, I am the rice of life. If he'd come to England, he might have said, I am the potato of life. But it doesn't have quite the same ring to it, does it? Jesus says, I am the bread of life, the one that provides for our basic needs and that can satisfy us now and eternally. So I wonder, what are the longings of your heart? What are the desires, the things that get you out of bed, that drive you through the day, the things that you're working for, that you're looking forward to? Well, all of these are really an expression of our deepest desire. What some people have called that God-shaped hole in our lives. So whether it's a relationship that we're looking for, well, we find that that desire for a relationship is ultimately satisfied in the one that we have with the Lord our God. With him we are loved and accepted, we are known and cherished. Perhaps our longing is for some kind of status. Well, with God, we are adopted into his family as his children. We are given that royal status. We are heirs of the kingdom. Perhaps the longing is for wealth. Well, God has said there's an entire new creation for us. Well, the streets are lined with gold. The city is adorned with bright jewels. All of it ours. Perhaps we long for pleasure. Well, there's more joy in the new creation in heaven. There's a feast, a party, a banquet. Maybe we long for rest. Well, there is the endless freedom of eternal life to look forward to. There was a man who lived in Africa, North Africa, in the 5th century, a young man called Augustine. And he spent much of his childhood and youth chasing after things of this world, chasing after love, chasing after wisdom and influence and power. And then it came to a point in his life where he actually came to know Jesus. He became a Christian. And as he reflected back on his earlier days, he prayed this to God and he said, my heart is restless until it finds its rest in you. There's that sense of eternal satisfaction in Augustine's words there. Our hearts are restless until they find their satisfaction in you, Jesus, the bread of life. Now, many of us know C.S. Lewis from the Narnia stories, but he's got a great picture of the way that we can get so easily satisfied with the wrong things, because he wrote things as well as the Narnia stories that reflect on the nature of Christian life. And he says that really our desires aren't strong enough. It's a bit like we're children making mud pies in the back garden. Now, that's lots of fun, isn't it? It's great playing with mud pies in the back garden. But he says, on offer is a trip to the seaside, and the beach and the sand and sandcastles. And we're just satisfied making mud pies in the back garden because we haven't realised that these even better things are on offer. And that's a picture of what it's like in our lives, that we're satisfied with the mud pies of job and family and things like that, whereas there's these eternal joys on offer with Jesus, the bread of life. Anyone who comes to him will not go hungry or thirsty. We can let go of our mud pies. We can wait. We can look forward to that day of glory when we're with Jesus in the new creation, when we enjoy this eternal satisfaction perfectly and forever. So that's one of the wonderful blessings that we have in Jesus, the bread of life, eternal satisfaction. Here's the other. We'll just cover this quickly. Eternal security. I don't know if you ever wonder about the question, will I be able to keep going as a Christian? What if it gets too hard? What if I mess up? What if there are real challenges ahead? Well, the wonderful thing that Jesus says here is that we are eternally secure with him. So look at what's there. All those the Father gives to me will come to me. So it's a bit like before the beginning of the world, God had a kind of big picture of who's going to be in his world. And he picks up a load of people and he gives them to his son Jesus and said, look, there's your people. You have them. And we, as we come to trust in Jesus, we're in that number. We've been given to Jesus by God the Father. And all those the Father gives to me will come to me. We've come to Jesus. We've come to trust in him. And whoever comes to me, I will never drive away. Can never be too bad for Jesus. Can never have made it too many mistakes. He welcomes everyone who comes to him. He'll never drive them away. And so, listen to what God's plan is. Verse 38. I have come down from heaven to do not my will, but to do the will of him who sent me. Jesus has come to sort out God's plan, God's will. And what is that plan? Well, verse 39. This is the will of him who sent me, that I shall lose none of all those he's given me, but raise them up on the last day. Jesus is not going to let any of his little ones go. No one can snatch them out of his hands. No one can jump away. It's not going to change his mind. And then the final verse there. For my Father's will is that everyone who looks to the Son and believes in him shall have eternal life, and I will raise them up on that last day. That's the confidence that we can have, the eternal security that we have in Jesus. He's not going to change his mind. He's not going to get fed up with us. He's not going to become overpowered by some stronger evil force. Jesus has a 100% track record. We've been hearing lots of statistics recently, haven't we, of how effective the vaccines are. Is it 60%, 70%, 90%? It's great that it's making a real difference to life at the moment. But I tell you what, if I went bungee jumping, I wouldn't want to rely on a bungee rope that was even 90% effective. If I was going bungee jumping, I would want a rope that is essentially 100% effective. If I'm going to go jumping off a big tall bridge, I want to be absolutely sure that I'm going to bounce back up and down and up and down, and then they're going to let me down nice and safely. Well, God has a 100% safety record. Trusting in Jesus is 100% effective. None have ever been lost that Jesus had hold of. Whether it's going through doubts or persecution or suffering or weakness, Jesus keeps all of his people to the very end, raised up on the last day. We have eternal security. So those are two marvelous blessings that come as we trust in Jesus: eternal satisfaction and eternal security. Just one thing that is needful to enjoy these blessings: believing in Jesus, the bread of life. Just that one work. So what are you working for in life, in all the strivings? Yes, life feels hard work at the moment, but there's just one thing ultimately that is really needful: trusting in Jesus so that we can enjoy his eternal satisfaction and eternal security.